Good afternoon. This is December 11th, 2007. We're in Natick, Massachusetts, and this tape is part of the Morse Institute Library's continuing Veterans Oral History Project. My name is Joan Craig, and our cameraman today is Dan McDermott of Natick Pegasus. We're privileged today to have David L. Jocelyn join us. Welcome, Dave. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
Thanks for coming in today. May I ask when and where you were born?
Natick, Massachusetts, December 13th, 1945.
And you currently live in Natick?
Yes.
And married?
Yeah, I'm married.
And how many children do you have?
None.
And what was Natick like back in the 50s, that your youth in the 40s, 50s, and 60s?
Peaceful and quiet.
As opposed to current day?
Correct.
What kind of changes have you seen?
Well, there's just a lot more buildings, and seems like everybody has six cars instead of back in those days. We maybe had one and a half or a half a car. So there's a lot more congestion, noise. Maybe people aren't quite as friendly as I remember them being growing up.
Where and when did you enter the military?
It was, November 14th, 1966. Went into the Boston Army base and then was bused to Fort Dix, New Jersey.
Now, had you already graduated from Natick High School?
Yes, I graduated in 1963, put some years into college, and then had started a job in June 66 and got drafted. Didn't think I'd pass. I did.
And now, why did you not think you would pass?
Well, I don't know. It's just common hope.
So you were drafted in 66?
Correct.
Why did you, even though you were drafted, did you choose the Army?
Yes, I went and enlisted because I didn't want to go to Vietnam, so I figured if I got some schooling, I'd probably have a better chance of staying stateside.
Did any of your friends or family members also join at the same time?
A neighborhood buddy had joined maybe 4 months before that in the Air Force. Otherwise, that wasn't really an incentive. Didn't have too much choice. I was going one way or the other.
And you went to Fort Dix?
Yes.
For your basic training. How long were you there for?
It was maybe around 8 weeks.
What was it like?
I didn't have any real problems with it. I was with a friendly, pretty much New Englanders or a lot of Massachusetts fellows were in my company. So we just always got along and did what we could to help each other. I think the worst part of it was I ended up in the Fort Dix Army Hospital for 9 days with what they called at that time upper respiratory infection.
Was it like a pneumonia or something of that
nature?
Well,
sort of. I have bronchitis or asthma problems also, and I guess they were just not fully diagnosed then, and that was probably acting up. And they wouldn't really give you any medicine because you were supposed to develop antibodies and fight it on your own.
Did you receive any type of specialized or advanced training during basic?
Not during basic, no.
And then how was it determined what you would do or where you would go next?
Well, when I enlisted, I chose the communications field. And they needed, at that time, 72,000 comm center specialists to fill their quota. And because I had some previous education and it was in the electromechanical field, they said I'd fit right in.
So was that going from Fort Dix elsewhere?
Yes, I went to Fort Gordon, Georgia.
Was this your first time off the Upper East Coast?
Yeah, I guess I'd have to say so.
Do you remember any kind of sense? Was it adventure, excitement, nervousness on your part going from Fort Dix to Fort Gordon?
Yeah, a little bit of everything, but I knew I had an uncle in Florida, and I hoped I would be able to maybe get a pass to visit him sometime, and I was able to.
Did others in your unit at Fort Dix go with you to Fort Gordon?
Yes, maybe a half a dozen of us at least. And one was a real close friend that, alphabet-wise, we were almost opposite bunk mates. And we'd gotten friendly. He was from Maine, Robert Harriman.
And do you still keep in touch with Mr. Harriman?
I haven't in some years, but mentally I believe I do.
When you were at Fort Gordon, what were your duties?
Well, we'd go to school during the day, training on teletype for a communication center job. And at nighttime, we had to alternate every so many weeks. Somebody would take care of the fires if we needed them at that time, and we did it, if I remember right, because it was a cold season. In other words, wood stoves, coal stoves. Somebody had to go around and tend those, and it was kind of an alternated duty.
And that was your heat source?
Pretty much, yeah. And no, I guess it didn't heat the domestic hot water. I think that was oil-fired. But.
Mm-hmm. How long were you at Fort Gordon, Georgia?
I think that was close to, it was 12 weeks.
During that time, did you get any time off to go home or to visit areas of the South?
I did take one weekend and went down to see my uncle in Orlando, Florida. Otherwise, you might take a weekend pass. And yeah, I did go to a few other parts of Georgia, I guess that was it, on the weekends.
Were the neighbors that were around Fort Gordon friendly to all of you as GIs?
Not really, no. And that was in Augusta, Georgia. And there was actually a train track right down the middle separating the two colors of races. And it was a little touchy to cross over either side almost. And so you kind of stayed away from down there. I mean, they'd like to take your money in the bars and restaurants, but otherwise they weren't that friendly, no, from what I remember.
Once you left after the 12-week period, did you know prior to the end of your 12 weeks that you would be going overseas?
It was probably 2 days before I was to leave that area. We had finished all our classes. They put us on guard duty that night. We hadn't had any for 12 weeks. And after we got off, they gave us all kinds of physical training and lined us all up and said, guess what? You're all going to Vietnam.
Was this, do you remember back then whether that was a surprise to you or you saw it coming?
Well, we had heard rumors from some of the extra duty personnel that had worked in the orderly room cleaning up or whatnot, that there was quite a pile of orders had come down, and it was quite well rumored that every one of them was headed for Vietnam.
How'd you feel about that?
A little hollow.
Did you have a way of notifying your family back here?
Yeah, they gave us free time once they told us, and everybody was just lined up at the payphones.
How much easier it is today,
mm-hmm.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
When you went to Vietnam, did you go over by plane?
Yeah, we left from Fort Lewis, Washington. It was a 27-hour flight total. It was broken up a bit, but they used commercial airlines. It was Northwest Orient, and they were retrofitted to be refueled in midair over Washington State. And then I believe it was Japan or some one of those islands was the first stop. They gave us a little time out of the plane. Then we were on another plane, the same plane for a short period again, and just barely enough fuel to get us to Vietnam from there.
What month are we talking now?
Beginning of May. was just before Mother's Day. It was my mother's worst Mother's Day, as she put it.
It had to be very difficult for her. Mm. So this would have been May of 67.
Correct.
Were you assigned as soon as you landed, or did you know where you were going?
No. We went to this, they call it a REPL depot, replacement depot. It was in Cameron Bay. The Army did a lot through that area. And we were there for a couple of days. They, you know, just kind of let you relax. And then they'd call a formation every day, call out your name. And that's how you knew when you were getting your orders to go someplace.
Now, did your friend from Maine go over with you at that time also?
Yeah, we were together all that time.
Mm-hmm. What do you remember about the area, the weather, the scenery, the noise? Do you remember anything?
In Vietnam? Mm-hmm. Or the initial? It had an odd odor because of what they burned and whatnot. It was outside of Cameron Air Base, so there was always plane noise and a lot of vehicles transporting people, goods, etc.
And once you left Cameron Bay, where did you go?
I ended up in Pleiku.
And how do you spell that? Do you know?
Pleiku. It's in the Central Highlands.
And what was the difference in that area versus Cameron Bay? Do you remember?
Well, Cameron Bay was more of a ocean area, and it was quite sandy. The ocean was not very far. I mean, you could really see it from where we were initially. And it was just one of the prettiest blues I've ever seen, other than maybe in Aruba on the water. And one funny incident along the way was going to Pleiku. We stopped in An K, and I guess they had to unload from the plane some supplies, so that we had to get out of it. And there was maybe a couple dozen of us, and we're out on the runway. All of a sudden, they call us to attention, and there's this small Learjet coming, and we had to face it and salute it. And it turned out to be General Westmoreland. He decided not to land, but we thought we were going to get to meet him. But at the time, what are you making us go to attention for?
Yeah.
You didn't even come and see us. But,
so it was General Westmoreland, and at mm-hmm. the time he was?
The commanding general of that area.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't see him, but you saw the plane.
Yeah.
So then in Pleiku, were you given duties and assignments right away?
We ended up in Pleiku, there is also an air base. So we were trucked from there, which is probably about half a mile from where I ended up. We get out of the truck onto a loading dock, which was the backside of the mess hall, which was actually a French compound before the 43rd Signal or Army area took it over. And they pulled three or four of us aside, get over there. And the rest of them, we were told were going to go to the comm center. They were going to set them up in their quarters and then show them their duties. They'd be back for us. About an hour later, they came back. Come on with us. You fellas have more education than the rest. You're going to get a different duty. Ooh. So I ended up in battalion control, which was, in short terms, BATCON. And we had to keep status on all the communication circuits that went through that area.
Now, when you talk about communication circuits then versus now, explain to those who might be watching this exactly what kind of circuits you had to use and what you were used to.
Well, most of it was transmitted through the air. Probably within a quarter of a mile from where our unit actually was what we called Tropo Hill, and it was a sizable hill. And it had at least, there was five tropospheric scatter antennas. These would look like outdoor movie theater screens, but without the actual screen area, the white material on it. It was just a framework of metal and some kind of screen. And those were actually used to transmit radio signals into towards the troposphere. and they would bounce back and go off to other areas such as Guam, Hawaii, and then eventually they'd be transmitted to the States. So there was five of them, and I think three received and two transmitted. Now also in that area there was ultra-high frequency antennas, very high frequency antennas, microwave antennas, short band, long band. So it was quite an area of radiation, and all the vans that were there to house the equipment. So I always used to kid each other that we were in a MANA radar oven made by the Army or something. So we hope all that radiation hasn't affected us too much.
Has there ever been any testing with regards to that on any of you?
I've heard stories, but I don't really know.
But you don't feel there were any effects as far as...
So far, I seem all right. I don't glow too much at night.
That's great. And you were at that time with, was it the 45th Battalion?
No, it was 43rd Signal Battalion.
43rd Signal. Did you see any combat while you were there?
All I saw was six rocket attacks, and they were basically spaced out. After the year was over, those of us that had come over together would joke around that we were probably the OJT, on-the-job training, for the Viet Cong Rocketeers, because it was cyclic, almost every 2 months.
That they would...
Yeah.
Would they have them focused on your base?
Apparently, they would always come into our area. And they were launched always from the same spot, 5 miles out. And after the first couple of attacks, the helicopter port that was 5 miles the other side would always know right where to go. And by the time they got there, there was nothing left, nothing obvious. It was always at nighttime, too.
So it conceivably could have been a training.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there was no consistency. The first time I went through it, there was, I think, 27 rockets. Another time, it was only two or three, but they were concise. They'd hit like a trash can, a generator trailer. Why? Coincidence, or did they really know what they were doing? Mm. And they'd come close to the air base, never touch it, never. They'd drop maybe 2 or 3 feet away from the end of it, the side of it.
The first time it happened, was it stunning to you?
Oh, yeah. I was on guard duty in the motor pool. And in the middle of the motor pool was a horrendous-sized French bunker that had been left behind by the French, because they were in that compound before we took it over. And I was standing beside a, what we called a deuce and a half, or a 2.5-ton truck. It was a cargo truck, transport, whatever. And I heard this shh. And I said, who's whispering at me, you know? And I look around, and I saw a flame coming towards me up in the sky. And right away, it hit me. This has got to be a rocket that they've talked about. So what do? Run to the bunker 10 feet away? No, I jumped under the truck, which if it ever hit it, who knows what the fuel would have done, even though it was diesel. And it landed up on Tropospheric Scatter Hill. Didn't do any damage. But then the rest of them, they walked it, rocked. The rockets right down the street, 5 or 6, 7, 8 feet apart, right in the middle of the road, which was dirt, didn't do any damage. Are they that good or lucky?
Or was it intentional?
Mm-hmm.
You'll never know, really.
Right. And we weren't bothering them. We weren't doing anything. We weren't fighting with them. We were just there providing support for our troops, so they didn't want us.
Now, was the climate very warm when you were there?
Yeah, it. What I remember was usually in the 90s. And we had a couple of days, and I think it was during monsoon season, where they actually had a record for that area. It got up to, first day, 112 degrees, and then it dropped 50 degrees that night. Then the next day, it went up to 124. And dropped 70 degrees. I would tell you, we were cold at night.
Do you feel you had the appropriate clothing to support both the heat and the cold?
Yes, yeah.
You mentioned the hill. What was the rest of the terrain like?
It was flat, plateauish, red clay, laterite, which you see a lot of in perhaps New Jersey.
Do you feel that your officers who were in charge were good leaders and treated you well?
Yes, yes, very.
Does anyone in particular stand out to you?
Yeah, there was a Captain Blase, and he was actually from, I think, Everett, Mass. And he came in maybe after the first 6 months I was there. And he was just such a nice person. And he went to Northeastern, and I had spent a couple of months there, so we had a little something in common. He was a couple of years older, obviously, but and just such a nice person. Off to the side, he'd always say, "You can call me Jim when nobody's around," you know. So.
While you were there, did you have good health? I know you mentioned earlier about having some asthma or early on asthma or bronchial problems. How about your health over there? Did you have to require any kind of medical treatment at all?
No, thank the good Lord, everything was fine over there.
How did you hear, and did you hear, about the progress or the casualties of war while you were over there?
There was Armed Forces Radio. I don't remember the call letters, but maybe it was AFR or something like that. And the movie that was made, Good Morning Vietnam, mm-hmm. was real. You'd hear every morning, "Good morning, Vietnam." It was real. It was a pleasure to wake up to that. And I think he left not too long after I got over to Adrian Cronauer, I believe was the name.
Were you able to go to other areas besides Pleiku?
I didn't have any interest. I rode downtown once, and that was enough to stop any other interest.
Were any of the Vietnamese constantly on base where you befriended them? Or
yes, because they did work for us. We had the women did the cleaning in our barracks, did our laundry every day. Some of them worked in our club that we had, or bar, whatever you want to call it. Canteen, I guess, is a mm-hmm. better term.
Could you communicate with them?
Yeah, they all spoke pretty good English. Actually, the younger boys that helped clean little latrines and whatnot with the older men actually got friendly with myself because I was kind of their size. So they'd come up, pat me on the head, and, "Ooh, same, same," and pat my stomach and say, "Ooh, buku kilo, you like us." And they were very friendly. Uh-huh.
Were you able to take any R&R, rest and recreation, or rest? What does R&R stand for?
Rest and relaxation.
Relaxation. Were you able to go?
Mm-hmm.
And where did you go?
In April of 68, my orders finally came down for Australia. Everybody else usually got it 6 months, 8 months into your stay. I was beginning to wonder if I was ever going to get one. So I did end up going to Australia at the very end of April. So it was like a transition period with an English America, knowing that soon I'd be in America.
Now, April in Australia would have been the cool, winterish?
Yeah, it's cool, it was a cooler season, fall, mm-hmm. correct, you're right. I did get to go to the beach. It was cold, but mm-hmm. I went.
Did you befriend any others while you were there, or did other members of your unit go with you?
I was the only one that I really remember that went there from my unit. The day I landed was Anzac Day, which is like our Veterans Day. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get to my hotel because there was a parade going on. They all grabbing me, "Hey, come over here. Get in line, watch this parade. You're a soldier, you want to watch." I really want to go to my hotel. "That's too bad. You're going to wait." Okay.
Did you march in the parade or
no,
just observe?
No, I'm carrying a suitcase and whatnot. So it was nice. And then actually at the hotel, which was Hotel Australia, I think is where I stayed, the bartender was from Oregon, had been in the service, went down there, fell in love with the place, and went back. And he was living there at that time mm-hmm. permanently.
Did it remind you of home?
Yeah, it was an English America. Mm-hmm. And with the short hair and the real tan, and my Boston accent would sneak out now and then, some of the storekeepers thought I was a New Zealander and would start trying to bring up conversation with me. And then they go, "Oh, you're really a GI?"
mm. You did not have to use weapons while you were there?
Believe it or not, I didn't even have ammunition. I had an M14 issued to me. Oh, we all did. Nobody had M16s where I was. And when you went on guard duty, they actually gave you a clip with 14 rounds in it. You had a sign for it, and they said, if you come back with any less than 14 rounds, you better have a body to bring along also.
So my assumption is you came back with all of your rounds intact?
As far as I know, I'm some form of alive and well.
That's good.
And I do have to say, I always had a 97% feeling that I would make it safely.
That's a good feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So you were beginning your downtime now, having come back from R&R.
Mm-hmm.
So
Can I add a little something
you
there,
sure
too?
You sure can.
And since the Army did all their traveling through Cameron Bay, my neighborhood friend from in the Air Force now was in Cameron Bay. And so I got to spend a little time with him. And it was one of the hardest moments in my life, leaving him behind, knowing he had 4 months left. And I was going home. But we did have a nice time together, and it was so good to see him, you know. And I could tell his mother when I got home personally, he's doing fine.
That he was doing well. And he did well and
mm-hmm.
came home
mm-hmm.
intact.
Yeah, he was in a very safe area.
And that's so important,
yeah.
isn't it? It
yeah.
is difficult leaving a good
mm-hmm.
friend.
Mm-hmm.
So Cameron Bay was sort of the clearing post?
Yeah, yeah. As we said in the beginning, it was the REPL depot, replacement depot for everybody. And I'd also like to add there on the coming home part that they told us you will be departing at 1 p.m. You better be at the plane at noon. If you're not on the plane by quarter off, you will not be leaving. You will wait for another day. So you know we were all there on time for that load. And they guaranteed us within 15 minutes we would be out of Vietnam. So it actually took us 13 minutes, and the pilot came on and apologized. We didn't quite figure that you'd be carrying quite so much extra luggage. You must have a lot of souvenirs. Usually I do it in 10 minutes. So he said I had to go a little further and faster to get us off.
And speaking of souvenirs, that kind of segues into something that you brought with you today. Would you like to show that piece?
What I have here is would be called by us Native Americans a quiver. We have arrows in it that are made of bamboo, and they're very, very sharp. And these are some kind of a leaf that they hand tied in here as a what we would use feathers nowadays for. And I actually have also a crossbow that I was able to send back in what we called hold baggage. It was a good sized box that the government provided, and you could ship it back. And that is probably about 2 feet across on the bow part and about 18 inches long on the actual body. And it would kind of look like the body was made out of a 2x4, and they carved it and made it look fancy, and then they stained it kind of a maple color. And it was probably more of a souvenir. It was $15 back then, and I'm sure Papa San got very rich every time he sold one. But they say these would go through a cement block at 15 feet if it was the hollow part of the block. So anytime I go to the veterans' breakfasts with the eighth graders, I always bring this, and they're always fascinated. I wish I could bring the bowl too, but I wouldn't want to chance any problems.
Sure, and it's in a bamboo.
Yeah, it's a tube. Section of bamboo that mm-hmm. they cut up and keep it in it, and there's
four in there.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
When and where were you discharged?
Fort Lewis, Washington. And what they did then was a big treat. They let you out a day early. So you had to be there midnight of the 13th. And they had you had to be there actually an hour early, the group that was going that day. And they had you all processed. You were just standing in line. And at midnight, see ya, you're now a civilian.
What did you do after that?
Well, I had been living off post for around 3 months because I was very lucky and made staff sergeant, which is an E6, in 2.5 years. So I was authorized to live off post. And there was an E5 in the orderly room who did some finagling and said that I could watch him if they, at the company, 78 Signal Battalion, allowed him to live off post too, and he had the car.
And this was at Fort Lewis?
Yes.
So when you came back from Vietnam, you were stationed in Fort Lewis for a few months?
No, 18 months.
18 months.
Yeah.
So were you still in communications in Fort Lewis?
Yes. It was a signal battalion, and all we did was go to the motor pool every day, line up our vehicles, check out our equipment, and they actually said, you're just here to rest, relax, get back to being a human being, a civilized person. But we had extra duties, too. We had riot control, which was if a riot ever broke out, they had a company of us trained to go out and quell any kind of a riot.
Were there any at that time?
None that we ever went to, and we hoped we never had to, because if it come down to it, we'd probably have to kill one of our own if they attacked us. And that's how you were really trained.
And this was at a time, or was this too early for some of the riots and other things
they were going
happening?
On. That's why this was...
Nationwide,
yeah,
they were happening at that point.
That's
because
why they were
of anti-war feelings.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And one other extra duty they gave us was for the whole 6th Army area, which was the West Coast, was burial detail. The rifle squad and the pallbearers.
And you went on some of those duties?
Yeah, I went home on leave for 30 days. When I came back, they said, guess what? You're on that burial detail.
Was that difficult for you because
yes.
These were your own?
Yes.
And some probably even younger than you.
Very tough.
Mm-hmm.
But we found a secret, which isn't really a good secret, but you'd have a couple of beers or something before you
went.
Handled everything fine.
Mm-hmm. So after 18 months, you were discharged. How did you get home? Did you come home to Natick?
Yeah, I wasn't going to. I was going to stay down in California for a couple of weeks with this Richard Garrison that I had lived off post with. But at the last minute, we both kind of looked at each other, and he said, do you really want to? I'd love to have you. But I said, I know. You want to have your family all alone? Yep. And he said, I think you do too. So I flew home, Northwest Orient, of course.
Into Boston.
Mm-hmm. And... My girlfriend at the time picked me up, and I surprised my mother, which she wasn't too happy, but she did like it.
She wanted some preparation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. She knew I was coming. I said it's. I gave her a couple of dates that depend on the flights, and so.
When you got home, what was it like coming back to Natick? How did you feel about that?
Well, as I said, I lived in South Natick. And on Glenwood Street, right next to a cemetery. So it was a nice feeling knowing that I wasn't in the cemetery and walking around. And it's so peaceful and quiet down there that it was fantastic.
So you were ready for some peace and quiet.
Mm-hmm.
When you came home, did you discuss with your family or friends what went on or any issues that you had heard about that you would just as soon have forgotten?
No. No, I never really said much of anything. If they didn't ask and they seemed somehow programmed not to, which I don't know where that came from, but they didn't.
Did you join any unit of the military reserve when you came home?
No, I didn't. I wasn't required to.
Did you join any veterans organizations?
Veterans of Foreign Wars of the United States of America. And I was kind of lucky there because one of the past commanders of the Natick Post 1274 was a neighbor a couple miles away. I'm at a school with his children and whatnot. He used to visit my folks every month while I was away.
He so, did?
Yeah.
And you've been active in that organization?
Oh, yeah, very.
Have you received any veterans benefits, such as the GI Bill insurance or hospitalization benefits?
Well, definitely the hospitalization through the VA. And I did collect the mass bonus when he came back. I think it was $200 or something, or $300, whatever it was.
Now, along with this hospitalization, you had mentioned prior to going on camera about being tested. Do you want to talk a little bit about that also?
Yeah, through the Veterans of Foreign Wars, I had heard about the VA hospital in Jamaica Plain here in the Boston area. Was looking for paid volunteers to participate in a PTSD study.
And explain to those who may not be familiar with PTSD.
That's post-traumatic stress disorder. Anybody can have it. It's not just from a war. It's from any traumatic experience that you may go through. So there's probably more walking around just from everyday life, let alone having been in the service or war. I mean, they say you get it just being in the military, let alone experiencing any kind of war.
So you had some testing done. When was this?
It's been going on probably for 10 years. It's something that every so often they'll call me up and say, you qualify, would you be interested? Sure. Because I really hope that I'm helping some fellow male or female Vietnam veteran.
Helping them through some of their stresses mm-hmm. by being tested mm-hmm. at the VA.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Have you attended any reunions of your old outfit?
No. I put some ads in various papers like the Vietnam Veterans of America news. I mean, they have a newspaper that is national. And it was a good 10 or 15 years ago, and I did get maybe 5 replies back from people I had served with at the 43rd Signal in Vietnam. But we just never got together. They were spread out all over the country.
How about your friend from Maine?
Like I said, probably mentally I communicate with him, but I've never followed up, and I should. I keep saying that. My wife has gone online and looked up enough names that probably are him, but I just haven't made the call.
How important to you was serving in the military?
Very important. It's something I think in a way everybody should do. I've also told people if you don't have to, don't. But
when you say everyone should, why?
You just have a better value of life. Some of our fellow countries do require people to have a year or two in the military. And you just have a better value system. You're a better community individual. You're more in tune to what's going on in the community. You want to be part of it more.
So do you feel in that respect that's how it affected your life, being more community
oriented? It definitely fine-tuned those qualities and interests, yes.
When you came back, did you settle down right away? Did you take any more schooling, or did you go right to work?
Oh, silly me, went right to work because I wanted to make money again.
And what did you do?
I had been working for ITEC Corporation, and that stood for Information Technology. Reconnaissance was their main product. And before I went into service, I was making cables and harnesses that were going up in the satellites that ITEC was part of. Now that had kind of dwindled, and they had bought out a small optical encoding division, or company actually, in Newton. And they asked me if I'd like to transfer there because where I used to work division-wise was no longer existing. So I did, and I went right into electrical assembly, which my nerves and everything weren't quite good for, now soldering, etc. So they needed somebody also in mechanical assembly in that department. So I went into that, stayed that for quite a while. And then I moved on to the testing department for these products that we were making. And then I eventually ended up in field service installing a digital readout on machine tools that we made there.
So how long did you work for them?
Oh, something like 13 years, including the 3 in the service, so it was probably 10 afterwards.
And you settled down, married. Did you marry a local girl?
I didn't get married till I was 47, So it's I didn't. I was free for many years. I actually lived at home until because I was the youngest. So I was probably 33, but it was just convenient. I was traveling all the time in the field service job. So on the weekends, at least, the parents had somebody home. And actually, my sister did live across the street, too. So
it was a real family unit in your neighborhood.
Yeah. I was the youngest. I have an older sister and had an older brother.
Mm-hmm. Looking back, are there any memorable experiences, characters, or humorous experiences that you want to share with us?
Well, the character would be this Robert Harriman from Bangor, Maine. And he was just a character, but a good person. And we just seemed to hit it off right away. Experiences, probably the funniest one to me was in Vietnam. There was a canteen had opened up on top at the hill there, the tropospheric scatter hill that we talked, tropo hill as we called it. And I think I'd put in two shifts that day in the battalion control. So I was kind of tired. So I went and had a few. And walking home, I decided, to the barracks, I'd take a shortcut down through the motor pool of the Vietnamese. Well, thank God they're the same height as I am, because I walked right into one of their pits where they would drive the trucks over.
Fell in?
Oh, yeah. It was funny at the time.
You didn't get hurt?
No, not that I know of. Seem okay.
Is there anything additionally or a comment or a thought that you would like to leave us with for individuals, including family members, who may be watching this tape in the future?
This is the best country in the world, and the only way we're going to keep it that way is keeping our military strong, unfortunately, because war really isn't nice. And unfortunately, it seems to be something that we haven't all learned how to be at inner peace. And when we do, we'll have world peace.
Well, I want to thank you, David Jocelyn, for a wonderful interview. Thank you for coming in.
My pleasure.